The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
As news cycles do, as the days go by, usually more truth comes out. Sometimes that's not the case, but certainly with Helene, we are learning more, and what we're learning is not good. Not good at all. Now there are reports coming out that not 1,500 dead, maybe many thousands dead, which reminds me, frankly, of Hurricane Andrew. I have a story up there right now. If you want to read that, look into it. It's very interesting, written by K.T. Frankovic. And it talked about Andrew, which I guess around the year 2000 something, before that. It apparently killed 40,000 or more. And it was all hushed up and covered up by the government and the media. We certainly hope that nothing remotely close to that is happening or has happened. I guess there's still people dying there. I don't know. But we're going to find out right now with William Gein, who was there last week doing his best as a citizen rescuer, so to speak, to get in there and help. And William, I'm going to turn this over to you and just tell us how bad it is and tell us some of the things that you saw and you experienced. I'm sure you've got a bunch of them. Go ahead.
Well, Helene knocked down 25 counties in western North Carolina to be considered disaster areas. And some of the lower counties, you know, they lost a lot of power, and for the first day or two, you really couldn't get around to almost anywhere because of the trees. It just took down trees left and right. Because one of the things that seemed to happen was that it had already been raining in this part of the country quite a bit. The ground was already soggy. The root systems of the trees had already been compromised. And this is like a hurricane-type worst-case scenario. When this type of thing happens, when a hurricane comes in on already saturated land, it really complicates things. And no one expected, you know, people knew that there was a hurricane coming. People had their candles and batteries and, you know, a little bit of supplies and things like that, especially people who've been through disasters before. But no one expected up to what some are estimating was 3 feet of water. Now, my prior disaster in the in September of 1999 during Hurricane Floyd down on eastern North Carolina, that was 22 point something inches of rain that destroyed so much in eastern North Carolina. And they're saying that part of the western North Carolina mountains got 36 inches of rain.
That's a yard of water. That's astounding.
Yeah, and then down east, you know, everything's flat. So the water gets on the ground, and it flows a little bit, gets in your ditch and moves around a little bit. But when the water gets, you know, coming down the side of a mountain, now granted, the Blue Ridge Mountains are not as vertical or sharp or what's the right word there as the Rockies, because they're an older mountain range. They're already weathered and whatnot, but you learn about how those mountains actually weather. I mean, one of the places that And one of the first things that started happening after the, now the storm got really, really bad in western North Carolina between 6 a.m. and 12 noon on Friday. And that's one of the things that makes this story very, very important. This was Friday. It'll be 2 weeks ago, you know, a week and a half ago on Friday morning. And that's when the worst of it hit, because right after that storm hit and the people that were in it realized that they were in terrible trouble.
Right.
They started working to help themselves. And some of them that were okay themselves started working to help their friends and neighbors. And then, and people started taking action inside and outside of the disaster areas.
Which was, as you said, I think 36 counties, something like that?
Well, 25 counties have been declared disaster areas, but then a lot of the other counties outside of the disaster areas took damage, had trees down, had power out. You know, for instance, like if you look at North Carolina, our largest city just down from the mountains is Charlotte in Mecklenburg County.
Uh-huh.
And
mm-hmm.
I think at one point Charlotte had over 100,000 homes or businesses without power. And the next county over, Gastonia, at one point had tens of thousands of people with or units without power. But neither Charlotte nor Gastonia were declared disaster areas. The next county over, Cleveland, yes. The next county over, Rutherford, yes. And but what happened was that as you got further up into the mountains, by the time you got to Asheville, which is the largest city in the mountains in western North Carolina, and elevations higher than Asheville, places, little places like Spruce Pine, Burnsville, Little Switzerland, Saluda, these places were not only hit, but they were just completely cut off from, well, actually, for a while there, the people in Asheville, which is a sizable city, were trapped. You could not leave unless you had an airplane. So, because it didn't just flood.
You also needed a runway to take off on and land on, and they were all flooded, a lot of them, I saw.
Well, they got the runway back up in Asheville fairly quick, but every road in and out of Asheville and everything around it, you couldn't get through in a normal vehicle. And it was complicated because it wasn't just floodwaters. It wasn't just trees down all over the place. There were giant mudslides, and there were places also where boulders were moving. And one of the first things that happened that really started to shock people was when a picture went around of a little place called Chimney Rock and Lake Lure. Now, Lake Lure is a man-made lake in, I believe, McDowell County. And all these counties, most of these counties, McDowell, Rutherford, Cleveland, they're all named after Revolutionary War heroes. Marion, North Carolina is named after Marion, the Swamp Fox. And so these places that got hit, the picture came out, and Chimney Rock was a little place just above Lake Lure where the Rocky Broad River, we have several broad rivers here, the first broad, the second broad, the French broad, the Rocky Broad, we have lots of broad rivers, and the Rocky Broad River ran through Chimney Rock. Chimney Rock is one of the most iconic things that people think about when they think of North Carolina, because you've probably seen it in a million postcards and posters. It's a big outcropping of rock with an American flag on it, and in the 1930s, some wealthy family spent a lot of money to cut a elevator shaft up there so that you could get there without using the steps. The steps, they still have steps there, and if you really want to take on those steps, might be a thing for more younger people. You can get up there the old way, but in the 1930s, I think a wealthy family hired some miners and technicians to blast a cave, and I was just there. I was there in July, and you go through the cave, you wait in line, there's placards and lights that show you about the building, of the erection of the access point to Chimney Rock and the history of it, and you know, all the stuff like that, and you get in the elevator, and you go up to a set of shops and a small restaurant. And you go out, and then you take another small staircase up onto the rock itself, which has a wrought iron fence around it to try to stop people from rolling off the side of it. And you have this incredible, gorgeous view down into the valley where the Rocky Broad River runs through Chimney Rock and feeds Lake Lure. And the Rocky Broad River is very rocky. It has lots of boulders in it. It's beautiful, clean water. I think they have trout in there. There's no pollutants. And there's all these shops and restaurants. Well, there were all these shops and restaurants and stores and coffee shops and taffy places and places to buy fudge and, you know, gift shops and things like that all along the banks of the river. And people like to walk along the river, and they like to get in it. You know, people, it's very common to go there and see people with coolers just sitting in the middle of the Rocky Broad River enjoying themselves and splashing around and having a nice time. To get to Chimney Rock, you have to cross over the Chimney Rock feature itself. You had to cross over this bridge, which is no longer there. And, you know, one of the things about it, Jeff, is I guess a lot of the people who built up there and everything really didn't think about how all those large boulders got into the Rocky Broad.
Sad story, but very true. People just don't look around, and they don't project. It's true.
Well, you know, it could have happened thousands of years ago, but
that's right.
You know, apparently from the people, the survivors who were in Chimney Rock, Chimney Rock is sort of a narrow gap, so the water seemed to really concentrate in there. And sometime around noon on Friday, there was an eerie rumbling sound, and that rumbling sound seemed to be a combination of trees coming down, water coming down, mudslides coming down, and boulders moving. So the deluge.
Not a good sound. I'll bet the ground was vibrating.
So the deluge that was hitting people and houses and vehicles and everything like that was a combination of trees, boulders, mud. And so when you talk about the death count, Jeff, I mean, no, I don't think anyone's ever going to know, really.
I agree.
Where it lands. Last I heard, there was over, 800 missing people, and it's no longer a rescue operation. It's now a recovery, and they're moving through the rivers and streams and narrow paths with cadaver dogs. You know, the hope is to possibly be able to recover more of the remains. There may be some people still up there shut off. I think they've gotten to most of the people shut off, but the one of the big parts of this story is that it wasn't FEMA, and it was not the Harris-Biden Democrats, which is my new term. Do you have a bell? Can we ring a bell every time we say that? It was not the Harris-Biden Democrats, which includes their allies like Democrat Governor Roy Cooper, that came in and started saving the day. By the end of the day on Friday, and definitely by Saturday, there were brave men and women, private helicopter pilots, who were flying into the area and lifting and bringing supplies in and taking people out.
Yeah. They call that the Redneck Air Force, which really came through. And that early video where they threatened to arrest the one helicopter pilot, a lot of people saw that.
Yeah, and it got flipped around real quick, too. The next morning, they were begging those pilots to come back because even the National Guard and military units that were up there, they didn't have the right kind of – their helicopters couldn't do the things that these smaller civilian craft could do.
These smaller civilian craft
were nimble, and they could get in the tight little spaces that you can't get in with chin hooks. And that's what was needed. You know, they can't carry but like one person out at a time. And that's what happened to the pilot. But, heroes come in different way, forms, and fashions. And the super nerd who owns his own helicopter was doing his thing. My theory on the fireman, the fire assistant fire chief of Lake Lure that was inappropriate with the chopper pilot.
Boy, he was indeed that. Yeah.
Well, I have a theory about him. I don't know him. The locals say he's a nice guy usually. Who knows what kind of pressure one would be under to be in that type of disaster area where, you know, they were picking the bodies of infants out of trees and rivers. So you never know exactly what impact that'll have. But that happened right after the feds arrived. And now that's not talking about National Guard. There were some National Guard units that were there. There were some probably federal resources that were deployed into the areas before, the storm really got bad. But here's a very, very important part of the story. But backing up, on Saturday, as people in North Carolina who are very familiar with Chimney Rock, one of the most iconic little towns in the mountains, saw the before and after picture someone had taken.
Which is gone. Basically
oh,
gone.
Yeah, the entire river changed course.
Uh-huh.
The Rocky Broad is now where the road was.
Wow.
So, you know, wow. And you can't get across it to get up to Chimney Rock. And, you know, there were places, there are men with chainsaws on four-wheelers who were the first to get to places like Bat Cave. And they decided that they were going to get there. And they headed into the rubble and the woods and the wreckage, and they cut a narrow path, and they drove a little further, and they cut a narrow path, and they finally got in there. And this is an important part of the story because now there's pushback coming from some of the liberals and Democrats and the Harris-Biden Democrats, the people who voted for this disaster. And I don't mean the storm itself, but the response. They're like, we don't need Indiana Jones types up here. We need people, you know, one FEMA director or lady said that if a man, we don't need Indiana Jones types up here with ATVs and chainsaws looking for a fit for their skills if we need somebody to sort diapers.
Unreal.
Yeah, and that's one of those idiotic things I've ever heard. I mean, that's like a doctor showing up with a stethoscope in an ambulance and being asked to sort diapers.
Yeah. Incredible.
But
really.
And look, if there's ever any type of tragedy like that around me and I'm in, I want the biggest, scariest looking car fixing ATV wielding gun toting copperhead eating chainsaw wielding man to pluck me out of it. And you know, and apparently in the city of Asheville, some of the ladies who may not have chosen very wise, some of the men and women who did not choose their partners wisely, found that in the disaster scenario, you know, when you find yourself suddenly thrust back to a earlier Paleolithic condition of mankind, you know.
Yeah. Hey, listen, the thin veneer of civilization is exactly that, and it can be ripped away at a moment's notice. People don't understand that. Everything they rely on, routine, they trust, they expect, is completely gone, just like that. And was it Chimney Rock is gone? How many little communities were wiped out or are virtually wiped out up there? Dozens? What do we know?
It's hard to say because, you know, not all of them are like completely erased. And even Chimney Rock has some remnants. Most of Chimney Rock's structures along the main drag in the river ended up splintered remnants floating around in Lake
right.
Fort. And the other thing, too, was that on Saturday, when we started seeing the pictures coming out of Chimney Rock, the engineers were saying, Friday or Saturday, it's hard for me to pinpoint exactly when it was, the word that came down the mountain was that the dam on Lake Lure was going to catastrophically fail, that there was water going over it and around both sides of it, and while the engineers
what would that have done to the area had the dam let go?
What they started trying to do at that point was evacuate all down river from the dam, which stretched through North Carolina into South Carolina.
Right.
But it would have been a whole nother, not just Chimney Rock, it would have been a whole nother swath of intense destruction, as well as leaving Lake Lure, which, you know, if people aren't familiar with Lake Lure, a good bit of the very famous movie Dirty Dancing was filmed there with
Spell
Patrick
Lure.
Swayze. L-U-R-E, like a fishing
like
lure.
Fishing lure, okay.
Yes. It's a man-made lake that's exceptionally beautiful. It's a little bougie these days. If you've got property on Lake Lure, you probably got a little bit of money. Boating, clean water, beautiful mountains.
You said bougie.
Bougie, yes.
As in bourgeoisie. I've never heard that used like that.
Yeah, bougie. Lake Lure used to be a place where it was sort of like there were camps and families go up there and stuff like that, but it's also always attracted people with money, and it's a beautiful place, but
that's why you're there. I understand.
Well, Well, thankfully the dam held. You know, that would have been a whole nother.
Is it still under stress? Or they probably let water out quickly, much as
it still it still stands, and it's mm-hmm. been holding back water. I don't know if you've seen pictures of it, but over half the lake is covered with splintered
debris,
homes,
floating debris of civilization. Have you heard of Blowing Rock, North Carolina? Blowing Rock?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were hit hard. Swannanoa was hit hard. Saluda, all sorts of stuff. But here's an important part of the story about something that happened Monday morning. Because, you know, this all went down on a Friday, and some people, especially people in power, they just can't be bothered too much on a Friday, you know, because their weekends are really, really important to them, Jeff. And, you know, so while the people in Western North Carolina were fighting for survival, and many of them losing that battle, including, you know, the reports of children being tied to trees by their parents who didn't make it to try to keep them above the floodwater, and illegals robbing homes and looting and stuff like that. And on Monday morning, I get a call because apparently Glenn Beck, who has his own aid organization, and some others are sounding the alarm that they're operating in the disaster area, but they haven't seen the Red Cross or FEMA anywhere. And then Sean Hannity's doing it. And a show here in North Carolina called the Clay and Buck Show. They're all like, we're in the disaster area. Our people are in the disaster area. People are calling our talk shows live from Boone, North Carolina, saying, where's FEMA? Where's the Red Cross? Because those are supposed to be the biggest organizations on the move. Now, a group like Samaritan's Purse was up there and others, and they were all operating. But suddenly, the Harris-Biden Democrats are embarrassed because the whole country's been told other people are up here without you, and you're not there. So approximately, I think, it was either 12:30 or 1:30, I can't remember, sometime in the early afternoon, a large C-130 comes rumbling down on the airstrip in Asheville, North Carolina. Never fear, FEMA is here. And by 4 o'clock, there's a Democrat-controlled press conference that had some very interesting things going on in front of the C-130.
Well, this whole thing sounds rather staged, shall we say. Go ahead. This is interesting. You really had a good look. How long were you up there? 3 days? 2 days? What were you up there?
I left on Monday.
Yeah.
And I got into the disaster areas on the lower levels on Monday evening. I had my vehicle, my SUV packed. My high mileage, soon to be 20, I have a 200, and people think that I'm in this for the money, and I've had people email me that listen to this show to say that, you know, I'm in this for the big bucks. So, Mr. Big
I know,
Bucks
just,
here.
It's everyone out there, it's true. William makes that so much money, he actually sends me 20%.
Let me tell you, that's why I hopped in my 283,000-mile, 20-year-old SUV.
They could have had to end up rescuing you. Go ahead.
Put money that I don't even want to mention on a Sam's Club credit card. Took up donations from friends and neighbors, both physical donations and contributions.
I don't know why people are so damn mean-spirited to even say that to you. It's disgusting.
But you got to ask for money, and I have to raise money, and they're like, oh, you're raising money because you're in it for the money. And I'm like, no. People who are in it for the money don't drive 20-year-old vehicles.
That's right. What those people should be really furious about is the simple fact that the Camel has raised at least $500 million in campaign funds. Now, she will get to keep whatever she doesn't spend. She and Dougie Emhoff, get the picture? That's the deal with campaign contributions. If it's not spent in the campaign effort, it reverts to the person that was sent in to help. Don't forget that. The Camel, $500 million by one account. And it's a good account. Go ahead.
Well, the good thing about my old car, she's four-wheel drive with a powerful engine, although she leaks a bit of oil, and she really came through for me. In fact, I've redubbed, we used to call her the Tank, but now we're going to rename her Rover One.
All right, what kind of vehicle is it? Everyone wants to know.
I don't. It's an old Suburban. It's an old Chevrolet Suburban.
Okay.
And she did good getting up into some tight places. She's
good.
Big. She's got a lot of cargo room. And right. what I did was I established a base camp with some friends, supplied some people I knew who were in the dark, who needed water, needed batteries, lights. And I took out about a third of my payload because on the way into the mountains I had to watch my braking because the car was so heavy and I couldn't see out the back very well. But I rearranged things so that I could open up three different access points on the vehicle and any individual could peruse through my toilet paper, body wipes, batteries, flashlights, jerky, snacks, bottled water, other toiletries, toothbrushes, box of Pampers. You know, I had a lot of stuff, and I would take and I had trash bags, and I would take one of the clean kitchen trash bags and turn that into your little baggie. But anyway, on Tuesday morning, I started deeper into the disaster zone, went into some higher elevations, and started encountering just different people in different places. And I would ask them, I say, is your power is out? And if their power is out, I was like, do you have what you need? And, you know, try to strike up a conversation. And a lot of mountain people are very proud, and they won't tell you that they need something. In fact, the government has had a lot of obstacles trying to get more people on welfare up in the mountains. They've had specially designed programs to get more people in the mountains of Western North Carolina to accept welfare because they're dealing with something called mountain pride. And so I found that some people who wouldn't tell you that they needed something for themselves might take a few things for a neighbor or a friend who might need it. Mm-hmm. Wink, wink. And so I distributed those all day, and then I dropped back down the mountain and handed over the rest of the first payload to Thomas Jefferson Charter Academy in Forest City. And I got to tell you, they had a tight ship there. They were not only distributing stuff to people in need, but a group of adults and I guess students at the school, like 15 people came out and had my vehicle emptied out and then back to base camp. The next morning I rolled
well
out
organized.
With...
Okay.
Yes. Next morning I rolled out...
Go ahead.
So the next morning, Wednesday morning, I rolled out with the remainder of my supplies, went and supplied a bunch of individuals, but then about mid-afternoon... I was checking in at a fire station where somebody had told me, oh, yeah, at one point on the first day, I encountered a rapidly spreading grass fire in a field, and I was able to extinguish part
kind
of
weird.
It.
What the hell is that?
Somebody had burned something earlier, and it had gotten into the field, and it had burned a 100-plus foot diameter. And it was on fire in 360 degrees directions, including towards an operating cell tower and home. And I was able to get part of the fire out heading towards the home and get the volunteer fire and rescue boys in there pretty quick to fix that. So I thought about being a volunteer firefighter, but then I found out I couldn't get out of speeding tickets from it, so I'm not sure if I want to do that. And then... I went the second day. I got a call. I saw a post online from somebody I knew saying that there were some privateer pilots at the Shelby, North Carolina airport who needed donations to fly into Ashe County. Now, Ashe County is way on up there, and at the time, only could be reached by air. So I flew a 20-minute trip in less than 15 minutes down the mountain to get to the airport, drove into the hangars, almost turned on the runway by mistake, but corrected myself in time to get to the place I wanted to, and then got my third load out. And when we got everything loaded on the plane, the last thing to go was this box of Pampers somebody gave me. And because somebody said they need diapers up there. And I didn't know, you know, whatever. They gave me the diapers. So I have a picture of the pilot's co-pilot and this little Cessna that doesn't even have a door on, like, the passenger side of it. And the co-pilot passenger is setting on is using my box of Pampers as his seat to be able to get him up into Ashe County. And then they took off, and so load two was done. Spent the night there and came back. By the way, that Wednesday night, I thought you guys were going to call me, and I got to a place where I would have good signal, but you guys didn't call me because we had a miscommunication.
Well, we honestly thought you were going to call in here, and that was our mistake. We got our wires crossed. At any rate, thank you for the effort. It was appreciated. And I'm glad it went well. I'm glad you're in and out of there and not a victim or a casualty. And all of you listening right now who are in the area, and there are some, we certainly never forgot the news on the site. I've kept as up to date as I can. There's an awful lot of news out there. Now they're getting ready to, of course, roll in Milton for Act 2 of this, hopefully not a trilogy, of this horror show. As I've said, it's going to be nothing but chaos before the so-called election.
And people are about to find out that we don't have enough resources and electrical components and transformers and meters to go on homes and stuff to rebuild this much of the grid at once,
right.
And that we don't make that stuff here anymore. And, you know, and one of the things is...
It's got to be shipped in. We don't make transformers. You know that the larger transformers, I forget what they're called, but they're not the little kind of... dishwasher size or smaller. The bigger ones all come from China, or they did, and we only have something like six. This is several years ago. They only have a very few in reserve. We're really on the edge of a terrible, terrible breakdown in this country. It could be done very easily.
Well, it may be happening now. I mean, when they go to try to repair things from Milton, they may start off by patching some stuff together and suddenly run low or out on certain components.
That's right. That's right.
And then it comes to a stop. Now, right here we are, 26 days, 3 hours or 22 minutes until a 2024 election, which I concur with Elon Musk, will be the last election that matters. The only difference of opinion between me and Elon Musk is Elon says if that Trump loses this election and Republicans lose this election, that the Democrats are going to make the illegal migrants into voters, and so no matter what will happen anymore. And I don't think Elon Musk – my difference of opinion is that and I'm glad to hear Elon Musk shouting with the biggest megaphone that ever existed, things that we've been trying to warn people about. It's no problem for me to have someone else do it. Doesn't have to be me or you, the one to be the ones, egos aside, as long as the message is finally getting out there. But I don't think Elon understands how easily so many of the migrants and the illegals can already vote. We may have already had the only election we could but get ourselves out of. But I'm still hopeful. We're hopeful. And I want everybody out there, because if you fight on these issues at all, if you make calls into talk radio shows, if you post on social media, if you get into email or text exchange with people, if you argue with family members over the phone about this stuff, you will know that right now the whole country is embroiled in an argument about this election. And as soon as something comes out, like FEMA's not doing a good job in Western North Carolina, immediately the left and the source back groups, they said, oh, yes, they are. It's those evil Republicans who didn't vote for Bill blah, 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 that why we're short on money. It's not because it's illegal immigrants. Look, here's FEMA's website saying, no, we didn't spend all your money on illegal immigrants. See, there, I quoted FEMA itself to explain how FEMA didn't spend our money on illegal immigrants instead of disaster victims. That's just not happening. That's that cult of Trump. That's that evil Trump. People, if you're involved in those fights, I want everybody to please follow our strategy of using the term Harris Biden Democrat. We're going to launch the hyphen beam on them. We're going to over hyphenate them, Jeff.
Yeah. That's a good term. I would go with communocrats, but that's fine. Whatever.
Well, let's start the hyphenation game with Harris because she's on the ballot. And let's tie her to Biden because she deserves to be tied to Biden.
Permanent.
It hurts her to be tied to Biden. And she said in several interviews stuff about being in sync with Biden. But let's go ahead and tie that hyphen of Harris Biden, and then put the other one, Democrats, on it because it involves Democrats like Governor Roy Cooper. It involves Democrats who voted for this mess. It involves the Democrats who are thinking about walking in there and pushing buttons for child genital mutilating Democrats today. So let's all start saying, Hi Harris-Biden Dash Democrats. And then on Facebook and Twitter, if you use Facebook and Twitter, you need to get really fancy pants, and I know this is a little bit of a curveball for some folks, and you need to use a hashtag. Hashtag is the number symbol, and then no spaces or hyphens, but a hashtag that says Harris Biden Democrats. Because if enough of us start using this, other podcasters, candidates, campaigns, journalists, people online will start saying it. And we tie them all together. And we tie them around the big cinder block and sink them all to the bottom of the river. So if you're fighting about why did FEMA spend its money on illegal migrants, why aren't the victims of Helene being put up in 4- and 5-star hotels like the illegals? They're trying to say right now that FEMA, they will confront you online and claim that FEMA did not spend their money on migrants, when they most certainly did. And Mayorkas came
We live in a culture that is, I don't know, lying is, so it's not common. It's almost the rule now of communication skills from certain people in organized government. They just lie. Constant. I've never seen anything like it.
Well, Mayorkas came out and said yesterday that they didn't, that FEMA didn't have enough money to handle the hurricane season in front of
them. Horse manure.
And so Harris Biden Democrats, because, you know, people could say that we were Trump Vance Republicans or say that we were George Bush Republicans. This type of expression's been used a lot to say, what kind of Republicans are you? These were the old Jesse Helms Republicans. You know, you tie the type of lawmakers to the, you know, type of what they are, and then you tie them to the different concepts. And right now they're trying to say that FEMA's out of money because Republicans wouldn't pass so-and-so bill. The Republicans, unfortunately, just passed a continuing resolution to fund the whole government through. And the Democrat administration of Harris Biden Democrats have been spending FEMA money on flying in illegal aliens misclassified as refugees and asylum seekers at taxpayers' expense.
It's astonishing to me that Americans, addicted to the mainstream media and the corrupt alt-news media as well, still can't seem to figure out that the country is under full and formal invasion. It boggles my mind. How much more blatant does it have to get? I don't know.
Well, here's some real bad news, Jeff. Those 25 counties that were disaster areas are the most conservative red Republican voting counties in the state.
There you go.
And it would not be surprising.
What a coincidence.
And I don't know the details as well about swing state Georgia, but I'm told that the situation is very similar in Georgia, and that makes sense to me because the Appalachian Mountains run through and foothills run through Georgia, the western part of Georgia, just like North Carolina. Eastern Tennessee, but Tennessee's not a swing state, so in Alabama and all those other states, they're not swing states. But Georgia and North Carolina are. And first of all, many of the people who are conservative voters are dead or injured, sick, depressed, struggling with survival essentials. They don't get 4-star hotels. They don't get $2,500 a month like the illegals. They get $750. That's a loan.
Don't and many of them that, are everybody. Being. I'm sure you've all heard it by now, most of you.
We're hearing a flood of people. We're hearing a flood of people who say, "I lost my home, and I've tried to sign up for the $750, and I was declined. I'm being turned down, rejected." Yeah. Because up in those mountains, Asheville, which is the only place that we have any evidence of FEMA actually being set up and operating, is a deep blue Democrat liberal city surrounded by people they hate in the countryside, those red Republican Trump-voting hillbilly rednecks that they can't stand, that they have so much hatred for that they are completely fine with sending money to Ukraine and Lebanon.
I know.
Instead of people who just lost everything. And come on, Kamala Harris and her type of Harris Biden Democrats, she actually tweeted like 2 days ago how proud she was of the additional $120 million they're sending to Lebanon, which was just attacked by Israel and vice versa, to a total of $300 million. She's crowing about the money she's sending to Lebanon, which is more than what they spent so far on the victims of Helene. So they're sending money to Ukraine, risking nuclear war for all of us when they shouldn't. and to Lebanon and every place else for anything but Americans who are standing there in disaster. And tonight, as we're talking right now, I haven't checked the maps, but Milton, which was up to a Category 5, which was hopefully predicted to come down to a 3 or 4 before slamming into Florida, like Andrew did.
Right. Thank you for mentioning Andrew. Thank you for mentioning Andrew. Nobody remembers Andrew now. We don't know how many died. Maybe 40,000 dead. We don't know. It was all covered up, everything. Andrew was a horror of a hurricane. Go ahead.
Well, Florida's a very flat place, and it's a thin band of land that a hurricane can just plow right over, and that's what's happening in Tampa, like right now. And FEMA's already dropping the ball up in North Carolina, and they're running around claiming it's because of evil Republicans who wouldn't vote for a bill to give them some more money or something like that. And but here's the truth. And I don't want to be right about this. There's a chance that Kamala's support, there's a lot of polling information and betting market information and other things that seem to indicate that Kamala's support levels are floundering. But if voter turnout is down 0.5 percentage point in these 25 counties, Jeff, Kamala takes North Carolina and probably the White House. And our entire Council of State candidates, which includes not only our candidate for governor and lieutenant governor, but people, Republicans who are in office, that are like the Republican Insurance Commissioner and the Ag Commissioner, they're very likely to lose their races, Jeff. There's a chance that Helene has already cast a die that is going to wipe out Democrats in the Council of State and the White House because of the effects. Now, we've got 26 days. Our fate is not written. And tomorrow or Friday, Alley PAC is going to launch. We're a low-budget activism PAC, but any funds that we're raising, because we do need funds, is going to go into an ad campaign targeting these 25 counties to share information about early voting. Republicans are notorious about voting on Election Day and shying away from mail-in ballots and early voting. But a lot of people who run the Republican campaigns are asking everybody to not do that this year. If you can early vote, vote. If you are in a place not hit by disaster and can vote by mail, vote. Because what happens is you tell yourself, well, I'm going to vote on Election Day, which is the way it ought to be for everybody, and then something happens. Your car breaks down, your cat gets sick, your mom calls you to come help her with something, whatever, and you don't make it. Well, the Democrats, they've been moving all of their ghetto voters. They've been moving all of their people out of the college campuses. They've already voted them. On October 17th, early voting is going to start in North Carolina, and the Democratic Party's election machine is going to have a list of every college student at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill that's registered.
That's next Thursday. Go ahead.
Next Thursday, and each college student that they vote, that votes early, they're going to remove them from the universe of their electronic little iPads so that they don't have to chase Gina Smith. Okay, they're going to be fighting like that. Well, we have to have something like that for Republicans on the ground everywhere we can, especially in the swing states. But we have to have a Manhattan Project statewide and national response for these 25 counties in western North Carolina. I already put out the call the other day explaining what this problem is, explaining why we need the Republican National Convention, the North Carolina GOP, the county parties, the congressional candidates, the statewide council of states, the conservative activists, and all of those men and women who are privateering and working with grassroots groups to provide aid into the disaster counties. We're going to need them by next week carrying little leaflets, pamphlets, something that is telling people, oh, hey, your early vote, this is how you can vote this year. You can vote now over at that building over there. Because the fire station you've been voting at since 1976 no longer exists. And some guy named Bill in a beat-up SUV just rode by and told me to share this with you. So,
wow. All right. I get it. Yeah,
because it scrambled the voter file. The addresses for these conservative voters no longer exist. or a derelict.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The phone numbers in the cell towers in a lot of places no longer work. We can't reach them by text messages. We can't reach them by phone.
Are they going to be allowed to vote in a delayed fashion because of the hardship?
Well, you can't delay things because a lot of election laws are very, very serious about having the closing of the books and the votes at certain times. But
let me do something
being said, that being said, two things have happened. The North Carolina State Board of Elections, which has both Republicans and Democrats on it, have voted unanimously, bipartisanly, to change some things to make it easier for people in these counties to vote. And you have to be careful about that, because if you change something in one county or one area but you don't do it in another, all sorts of lawsuits will start flying saying, well, you let Republicans do this, but not,
yes,
you know.
Yes, of course. Understood.
Yes, but also
right.
our legislature, like... our legislature, which is controlled by Republicans for now, they just passed something, like, I think today. And I know that it happened. I have a statement that I can read you about it real quick that was issued by someone I follow on Twitter.
I'd like to do, William, and I want to get this in, Springfield, Ohio is immersed in something that many of us are going to see before this is all over, however it ends. I want to play like a minute and a half statement by one of the residents in front of the city council in Springfield. You go ahead. I need about 2 minutes, so go ahead.
Okay, well, let me see here. Let's see here. Our U.S. Senator Ted Budd, who's endorsed by Alipac, put out a tweet today saying it's outrageous, the Biden-Harris administration. Now, let me change that. He should have said, and maybe we'll get him changes, he should have said it's outrageous that the Harris-Biden-Democrat administration claims that FEMA may not have the money to make it through hurricane season after they allocated over $1.4 billion to house illegal aliens who should never have been in this country. So that's a U.S. senator telling us that they use $1.4 billion. Here we go. This is a statement from Michael Whatley, who is the GOP chairman. So I'm guessing that Whatley here is, forgive me if I'm wrong, but he may be the North Carolina GOP chairman, or maybe he's national.
All right. Go ahead.
He says, quote, very short, I applaud the North Carolina legislators for their quick and comprehensive action to ensure that North Carolinians struggling to recover from Hurricane Helene are not deprived of their right to vote. Under these new rules, the GOP and NCGOP will work hand-in-hand to mobilize. So they understand it. I was on some of these people in the General Assembly and in our congressional delegation. I was on the phone or texting or communicating with them like Sunday and Monday. Everybody agreed. We're not callous people. Our main goal was to get people to safety, to get emergency supplies in, and to save lives and to get people out. That is always going to be the main objective, helping people, not politics. But underneath it, by Monday afternoon, and especially once I got up in the hills by Tuesday, I'm like, if these people don't vote, it's going to cost Republicans the White House and the entire state and these 25 counties who got pummeled. We better come up with some new and innovative ways to get these people mobilized like Democrats do, or we're all sunk.
Let me play this clip. This is important. Springfield City Commission, this is a city council, the city commission. What slime bags are sitting up there high above everyone else in the chamber? This woman is going to speak very, very adroitly, very carefully, and exactly about the situation.
I have some questions. Whose idea was Haitian Flag Day? Who approved it? What nonprofits did the city coordinate with to implement it? Did Haitians pay to use Veterans Park for their concert, or did a nonprofit pay for it? Does the rent you receive come from any government agency or nonprofit? If so, which ones? Today, a video broke of a Haitian cutting up what appears to be a dog in a backyard at Red Coach Village. There are other videos all over the internet that shows Haitians torturing and consuming cats and dogs. You can deny it's happening, but the facts prove you wrong. Most Haitians are born at home with no doctor in attendance to certify the birth. There is no functional government agency in Haiti that is handing out official birth certificates. Haitians are creating false identities through the CBP One app using their phones. You don't know who they are or what their background is, yet you protect them instead of the citizens who pay your salaries. This issue is not going away anytime soon, and it will only grow larger the longer it takes for you to start protecting the American citizens of this city. The Haitians in Springfield are not migrants. They're paid mercenaries, occupiers, and soldiers of a foreign army supported by American tax dollars. You said there were 20,000 here. Now you're backtracking on the number. Were you lying then, or are you lying now? It's national news that FEMA spent all of its funding on migrants, and there is nothing left for hard-hit Americans of hurricanes and flooding disasters who are currently in desperate need of those funds. People are angry that you and others like you put foreign invaders first and Americans last. Thank you.
Said it all. This is an army. She nailed it. Invaders being paid by U.S. tax dollars. And you know what they did? They threw this woman out of the meeting about a minute or two after this. They threw her out. These people at these city and community council meetings and county councils, in many cases, are Bolshevik communists who hate this country. Many are. Not all. But be careful and beware. I hope that was worth listening to, William. That impressed me.
Thank you, Jeff. That was powerful. I'll try to share it on my end. Yes, we do need some donations and support at alipac.us, A-L-I-P-A-C.us. We're about to launch a special and innovative and hopefully inspiring Get Out the Vote campaign in the 25 counties in North Carolina hit by Helene, where those people's voices deserve to be heard. We're going to do everything that we can afford to do to try to help them to vote and be heard in the 2024 elections, because whether they speak or not, whether they show up, whether they cast ballots or not, could change the outcome for the entire state and nation.
Very good. All right. Wonderful report of a horrible situation, a shamefully horrible situation, I might add. Shame on this alleged government. It's not our government. Shame on what the county and others have done not to help the people there first and foremost. And I want to thank all of you Americans out there, and there are many of you, who went up there, put your lives on the line to help your fellow American citizens. That's what made this country great. We never want to forget that. Thank you, William. I'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
All righty. Good night. Okay. And that story with that little audio clip you just heard will be at the top of headlines and within the next 10 minutes. Share it. Start at 50 minutes and the lady begins to speak. And watch what happens afterwards. The citizens start yelling at this assemblage of council people, scum, and they all get thrown out. You get the head guy calls the cops in. It's an obscenity, which is so descriptive of much of what's holding this country together, allegedly, by way of politics. Be right back. Hold on.